Hello, hello, everybody. My name is Julia Jassy, and you're listening to episode 5 of Jewish Identity Crisis. Hello, everybody. We are back with episode 5 of Jewish Identity Crisis. This week, it is just going to be me. Isaac is traveling. So that means that you guys are going to be blessed with just my voice for the whole episode. You're welcome, honestly. Just kidding. I decided today that for my week of Jewish Identity Crisis takeover, I'm going to have on my podcast the 2 most inspiring matriarchs ever. And yes, I know you know exactly who I'm talking about, my mom and my grandma. So I have them on today, and we are going to talk a little bit about our background, talk a little bit about what it's like being a strong Jewish woman. And you guys submitted some really cool questions for me, so we'll cover those as well. To start off, I am about to bless your lives by introducing you to my mom and my Nona. Hello, guys.
Hi.
I'm so happy to be seeing you guys because I'm away at college and I miss you guys very much. And so this is just kind of like a phone call. We'll just chat for a little bit.
Miss you too.
I miss you guys. Okay. So to start off, I'm going to ask you guys a couple of questions that I obviously know the answer to, but I want to, you know, set the background, set the mood for the audience today. So to start off, if you guys want to tell me a little bit about, I know what we've covered my background, my family background a lot on the podcast, but I want to hear you guys talk a little bit about it because I know that Nona, for you, one thing that you've been so proud of is that you grew up while Israel grew up, that you were born when Israel was born, you grew up while Israel grew up, and if you want to talk about that at all.
I was born 21 days before Israel became a nation. It was in April 14th, but I was born in March 23rd, so it's 21 days. So I was blessed to live in Israel, were born in Israel. My father was born in Israel when it was Palestine. Israel was called Palestine then. I grew up and I had a great memories growing in Israel. Cousins were in our neighborhood. We were all, saw them every day and
super close.
holidays super together, and it was very close, not like today. Everybody lives in different state and hard to see them and they have to travel. We didn't have to. We were right there. So it was great.
And so I know that you said that your dad was born when it was the Mandate of Palestine. And so then mommy's Nona. So your mom, wanna tell us a little about where she was born, because it's a crazy story.
A crazy story. My mother, her parents were on the way to Israel. My grandmother was pregnant with my mother, and they went via Egypt. She was born in Egypt, in Alexandria, and she came to Israel as a baby.
A multicultural family.
Yeah.
And so, mommy, you were born in New York.
Yes, I was. Long Island.
But your parents both are Israeli. And when I'm growing up now, being the child of an immigrant is a very different experience in some capacities than it was when you were growing up.
Definitely. When I was growing up, first generation American, I tried super hard to assimilate because I didn't want to be different. I wanted to blend in. I wanted to have bologna and cheese sandwiches like everyone else, but I got the really cool lunches that I so appreciate today. I was like, I just want a name like Jennifer or Michelle, but I was Orna, and I always stood out no matter how hard I tried not to. But you know, today, everything that I tried to hide from is so endearing now to first generation Americans, you know? Those are the things that people are looking for and they want, where I was trying to assimilate.
Yeah, I feel like the older I get, the more I try to do the opposite of that, the more I try to embrace the background that that like you have and that Nona has and that Dad's family has too. I think that one thing I've had a hard time with is like balancing all the multicultural parts of my Jewish identity. That's something I've had a hard time with, but that's a whole different story. I think that it's crazy because when you were growing up, those are things that you're made to feel ashamed of. And I think one thing that we're trying to do now, and one thing that Isaac and I started this podcast to do, was to celebrate those things and to talk more about them. So hopefully one day our children can just not have to even think about it, can just be proud of it and not have to worry. So obviously we are all Jewish women, which is why I wanted to have this podcast today when Isaac wasn't here, because we'll make it about feminism, you know? So one thing that I was always raised thinking about was Nona, in my mind, was always the depiction of like a strong woman. And Mom, in my mind, was always the depiction of a strong woman. And growing up, I didn't really think about feminism. I didn't think about being different from a man in any capacity. And that's something that as I'm getting older, I'm realizing the world sees women as, and I have to kind of like battle against, because you guys did not raise me to think of myself as anything below a man. You raised me to be an equal. And so I'm wondering, I know that we are raised in three different generations, how that empowerment came about for you both.
I was raised that women are nothing. Men are superior to women. I grew up with three brothers, and I was taught to cater to them, to do what they wanted me to do, you know. Polish their shoes and then iron their shirt before they went out, and do, you know, my job was to do the dishes and clean, you know. I didn't feel strong, on the contrary. But today, I'm strong.
And she gave that to me. You gave that to me.
Yeah, because I didn't have it. I didn't want my daughter not to have it. And I did whatever I could, you know, to make her feel
empowered. She did.
Yes.
She did. Absolutely. She taught me self-worth and, you know, determination. And quite the opposite of how you grew up.
You want something, you go and get it.
That's right.
Not like our parents, you got to go to work, you know, you have to bring money in, and not to learn education, because eventually you're going to get married and your husband's going to take care of you. That's what I grew up in. So I didn't want Orna, my daughter, to feel the same way.
That's why we pushed you growing up, Jules, and wanted you to get the best education you could. And here you are. Look at you. We
God
did something
bless.
Right, huh, Nona?
I always say that a lot of who I see myself as a woman, which is weird to think of myself as not a child, but like who I think of myself as is based entirely off of the example of strength that you both gave me. I remember when I was a kid and I would have sleepovers with Nona, I was like a child. I remember we used to lay in bed before night, and you used to tell me all of these stories about growing up in Israel. And I remember, like, I'd always be like, oh my gosh, my Nona is the coolest person ever. Like, I want to be just like her when I grow up. And my mom, you'd always be the person that when I was having a life crisis, which if you know me, happens once a day, I would call you, and you'd just absolutely be able to put my life into perspective and to figure things out for me. And you've always been those amazing examples of strong women that I've always looked up to. And so it's crazy because I think as women, and also as Jewish women, the role that we like play and the role that we play in society has changed tremendously over our three generations. And I asked the audience for some questions today, and a lot of them were asking about this change in the role that a Jewish woman is expected to play. And Nona kind of touched upon that a little bit, talking about how you were expected to get married and have a lot of Jewish babies and take care of your family, and that was expected to be your role. And now it's like a totally different thing. And I think it's funny that now the way that I see my role in my future, God willing, is to go into like activism for the Jewish community. So it kind of has come full circle.
Also what I got from my mom was very different than your typical American Jewish mom would give, where she said, marry a doctor, marry a lawyer. That's what the typical, you know, stereotype Jewish mom is, versus what I grew up with was demand respect for yourself. It was always drilled into me to demand respect for myself. It wasn't marry a Jewish doctor. It was be careful for the Jewish doctor because, you know, not always the greatest reputation sometimes.
Always a mensch.
Hey, but it was always respect.
Bad mensch, though.
Respect.
Okay.
Yes, and I ended up marrying a Jewish doctor.
But he's different.
Who is completely different, than it was always about respect. Ironically, I did marry a Jewish doctor.
Yeah.
Respect greatly.
Love you, Dad, if you're listening to this.
Well, love very much.
But yeah, one thing that you mentioned there is super, super interesting. So let's talk about that. You did not grow up in the typical Jewish American household. I do not grow up in the typical Jewish American household, but you even more so, both of your family, you're Mizrahi and Sephardi entirely. Like, you're not Ashkenazi at all, which is super uncommon, especially back in the olden days. So how is that like for you? Like, how is it like going to Hebrew school or going to synagogue or going to places that, especially, you grew up on Long Island, which is a super homogenous place?
So, like, totally did not fit in. Like, I just did not fit in at all with the typical Jewish girls I might have gone to school with, which were not a lot of them where I grew up. You know, going to Hebrew school was not fun. The Hebrew school teacher was Israeli, so of course, oh nah, tell them how to say this, oh nah, tell them how to, so not liking the attention, it wasn't for me.
We took you
I
out.
Stopped going, it was just not for me. I did, just let me be in the class, let me sit and, you know, learn on my own, but very different. It was, it's night and day. The Ashkenazi versus the Sephardic way of growing up, you know, is just very different.
Yeah, and there's a good and bad in growing up in two different worlds, like Ashkenazi and Sephardim, because the Sephardim, they expect the children, like when I went to work, I had to give my money to my parents, not education, you're going to get married and your husband's going to take care of you. Where the Ashkenazis are different. They push the kids to go to school, to learn, to make something of themselves. There's some of us,
you know, good and bad in each.
Yes. I wanted my kids to go to school, and I helped as much as I could. I came to America 54 years ago, and I had, you know, my kids here. So I wanted them to be successful. So it's going to school with Ashkenazi teacher who didn't give a
they didn't have care. Any love for this Sephardic.
Because when you grew up in Israel, there was a tremendous amount of discrimination that was happening there.
Absolutely, my brother went up with the. Ashkenazi girl, and her parents didn't want it because we were Sephardim. We're dark skin, so they did not want. Yeah.
And your parents, Nona, they were from Spain and Yemen. Your family was from Spain and Yemen, so you're a mix even with more Mizrahi, which is even more at the time discriminated against in Israel.
My family, there were no discrimination. You know, if he wanted to marry an Ashkenazi girl, that's okay, but they didn't
want him.
They didn't want him because he was, even though he was a good guy, they didn't want him because he's a Sephardi. He's not Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
And it's still every now and then, it's going on in Israel still today. It's a shame.
A lot of the population that still experiences it are like Moroccan Jews, like Ethiopian Jews in Israel. But the number of intermarriages in Israel is, I think, like 60% right now. It's really intermarriage between like different sub ethnicities, like Mizrahi and Sephardi. Like, I'm a mix of like Mizrahi, Sephardi, and Ashkenazi. So like, I'm kind of like the product of that kind of going away. Okay, so there is a question. This is a juicy one about the like sexism in some Jewish men, and how as Jewish women we kind of combat that.
It's just attitude. It's all about your attitude. It's just giving it back.
Right. You know, I was married to an Israeli, and he was a tough Israeli, and he thought I'm like a machine that would bring children, and he wanted more kids, and I didn't want to. I had a boy and a girl, and was fine. And I stood for myself, and I did something about that. What did he call me? Selfish, because I stopped it too, and I stood for myself, and I went to the doctor, and I did something about that. Even though my
yes, no one is saying birth control.
Yes, queen, it's whatever it is.
No one is an empowered modern feminist.
Yes, I stood for myself, and that's what I did. Right? With two beautiful children, a boy and a girl, enough. And even if it was two boys or two girls, I would stop. So I think I stood up for myself.
Yeah.
See, this is why I said my mom and my nonna are the strongest women I've ever met.
Yes.
Okay. So another juicy question we have from our beloved audience is about the appearance. I think that our family is interesting because, Mom, you look way more Middle Eastern than like a typical, I think, stereotype of what people think a Jewish person looks like, which is indicative of how many Jewish people look like, but people don't really understand that. I think that you look more Middle Eastern than I do. Growing up, I'm sure, especially like being a Jewish woman, had a tremendous impact on like the way you were treated.
I don't necessarily think it was an issue, because I think people really couldn't pinpoint what I looked like, where I was from. I think I got a lot of Italian, I got a lot of Spanish, I got Greek a few times, but never Israeli, unless it was another Israeli.
People don't know what that means.
They don't know the green eyes, the dark skin, the curly hair. They don't understand that, you know? But yeah, so nobody ever could guess. But nobody ever thought I was like your standard American, you know, Jewish, Eastern European. I never, ever got that. But, you know, people would just walk up to me and start speaking Spanish. I'm like, huh?
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
People think that I'm Spanish a lot. I mean, like, we're Sephardim, but, like, people also think that I'm either, like, Spanish or Arabic a lot. And those are the two that I get the most. If not, then I'll get, like, from Italy. But that's rare.
Yeah.
But you can pass, like, if you look at yourself, and I can see now, Arabic, too.
It's because we're Mizrahim too, because obviously all Jews are indigenous to Israel. And so we all have actually, like, genetically more similar genome makeup to other people from the Middle East than we do to European counterparts, even Jews who spent millennia in Europe. Side note. But also, more recently, Mom, your family is from Yemen and Iraq and places in the Arab world. So I think it's really interesting to see this interplay of like our culture kind of outside of the Western world, which is something that I was raised a lot with. I grew up eating kinyot on Passover, and like I grew up eating like kafta and kibbeh and amba and all of those yummy things. And I also grew up eating like babka and other like European things too. I grew up with like kind of this mix. So, Mom, when you married Dad, how did you decide what parts of your cultures to accentuate in raising your children?
You know, it's funny you ask. Dad being Ashkenazi and me being Sephardic, Mizrahi. You know, at the beginning it was a little tough. Passover was an issue, like rice and beans or no rice and beans. So, actually, we spoke to the rabbi who said, you know, this is the reason why we don't eat rice and beans. It was traveling, you know, with a big ship and cargo, and things got mixed up. And so, you know, but he's like, you know what? It's delicious. You do what your wife does. Eat it. It's a separate thing now. And you know, it's there's no contamination. It's fine. You can eat those things. And, you know, so Dad was comfortable with it. And, you know, it just makes Passover a lot easier, you know. But yeah, we spoke about it and came to the agreement together.
Yeah, I feel like I've spoken about this a bit on the podcast. When I was growing up, like I grew up in an area where I kind of whitewashed my Judaism a lot. Until recently, when I've randomly become very aggressively Jewish. I don't really know how or when that happened, but here I am. But growing up, a lot of the way that I consumed my culture was literally by consuming my culture, by eating a lot of food. And I remember like my most distinct memories growing up is like, there are two of them. One was every single Passover, you would make a huge pot of Slata Kocha, and for days, the entire house would smell like garlic and onions and tomatoes because he'd be cooking down this giant pot of vegetables and seasonings. And it would go from this huge pot to this tiny little thing left because it got so cooked down. And I remember one year, it's so good that we want to like eat the bowl. And one year, the bowl had soap in it and Dad didn't. Dad didn't know, and Dad went to take a spoonful of Slata Kocha, which, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically like the tomato part of shakshuka, but like a billion times better, more flavorful. He took a spoonful of like soapy Slata Kocha and tried to eat it, and he could not eat the rest of Passover.
He for like a good year or two didn't want to touch it. Eventually.
Eventually. My other favorite memory revolving food growing up was, it was a snow day, and my sister and I, Maya and I, were playing Clue, and we were drinking chai, I remember distinctly, and you made samne, which yeah. Basically, for those of you in the audience who want to know what samne is, Mom, do you want to explain it? Because you could probably explain it better than me.
Donna and I will describe it.
It's salufa. It's called salufa. It's a flat pita.
Well, you can use any kind of pita, pita, flat pita.
But it's better off if you have like if you're going to a Syrian or Arabic restaurant.
Which you don't get often.
You know, a grocery store. You have this flat pita where you cut it to little pieces. But before that, you put either butter or I grew up in Israel, they had special some kind of lard or whatever.
I'm sure
it was, oh my God, it was so delicious. My father used to make it for us in the wintertime. So you melt this butter, then you take the salufa, you cut it small pieces, and you put it into that mixture.
A lot
and you
of butter.
Mix it together, and then you take thousands of eggs and you
whip them up.
Whip them up, and then you throw them all inside.
It becomes custardy.
It is so delicious. You can make it, you know, with matzah too. I make it with matzah
matzah
also.
Brine.
It's yes,
not like matzah brine. It's not matzah brine.
You want to make it like a custardy. It just becomes.
You don't fry it.
No, you just.
You just
on a low
butter.
Heat.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay, as soon as I come home, you're going to have to make me some of that because now I'm salivating. I've been trying to teach myself how to cook since I've come to college. It was Rosh Hashanah, and I decided to cook dinner for myself and my roommates, and in classic Jewish fashion, cooked way too much food and then gave it to friends and like, please just take some of it, and then had leftovers for days still. And so I was FaceTiming both of you and you guys were teaching me how to make it. And I made kafta, which was really good. I'm not trying to flex on the whole audience here, but like my kafta was very good. I made couscous, which I kind of messed up, but it's fine. I made hummus. I made Israeli salad. I made cauliflower with some za'atar. It was very good. Both of you guys, but especially Mom, because you didn't grow up in Israel. Did you find also that your culture was tied to food? Because I feel like Judaism is one of those kinds of cultures where it's tied to food.
That's what it is. I remember every holiday, my mom would painstakingly make one dish I remember specifically. It was fish. and you took the fish and you soaked it in like milk or something. It was like a bacala,
It's in water.
And then she
would,
the salt.
The salt away.
And she would cook it in these tomatoes and peppers and onions and garlic. And every holiday, major holiday, we would have a house full of people.
Oh yeah.
And she would make this fish dish. I'm like salivating for it too right now. And it was a little spicy and it was so flavorful. So and every holiday was that dish. I don't know what it's called.
Others,
the schnitzel that she used to make. And there's so many things. Like baklava you used to make. Everything with us was tied with food.
Yeah.
It's all about the food.
I remember before I left for college again, we had dinner with us. And Aunt Dina. And Aunt Dina is my mom's mom's sister. So my great-great aunt. And this was crazy because she told me so many stories about my, like, Nona Victorious, like, my mom's Nona.
My Nona.
So, like, kind of like what we were touching upon before, she was born, her father was Yemenite, and he was forced to fight in World War One. Because of colonization. So he was in the British Army, was on a caravan in Egypt, was in a boat accident and like assumed that he died, right? So her mother was in the hospital, gave birth to this baby and didn't want to name her because she was waiting for her husband to come back alive. What was the placeholder name she gave her again? Wasn't it Arabic for girl? So the story, the legend has it that for days, she waited for her husband to come back. Her husband's name was Joseph. I'm getting the family tear down. And then one day, he was alive by a miracle of God, and she decided to name her daughter Victoria. I heard so many interesting stories from Aunt Dina.
Which is incredible.
She's 93 years old today.
Yeah, God bless.
Yeah, she's the last of my mother's brothers and sisters.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say, something that I've been kind of aware of recently, is the importance of documenting your family history. As Jewish people, we are constantly on the run because someone's constantly trying to kill us, so we have to constantly be moving somewhere. And therefore, there are so many stories that would be lost. Is that something that you guys kind of saw growing up, or I think that's a newer concept?
You know, I went through a period where I wanted to document things, but no one, like everybody said something different. My uncle, Danny, his wife was trying to document things. When they were in Spain, they were trying to get stories. Yeah. I heard a story that my mom's maiden name is Calderon, and that they were named Calderon because their ancestors were from a small town in Spain called Caldon, and from Caldon they got Calderon. And then my uncle, who is my mother's oldest brother, said stories that were different than, you know, his brother. And then Andina had other stories. So, like, you know, it's really hard to document when we're getting different things from different people, but it's so important if you have the opportunity to document your history.
You as a young kid, you should do that and ask mom and ask questions. We didn't think of it when I was growing up to ask, you know, all kinds of questions, where you're coming from, what happened to you, what, you know, if it wasn't as open then as it's open today, that you can ask questions, you know, you couldn't ask questions then. You know, for whoever listens to you, you should really have some time for your grandparents, for your parents to get some information about the background.
Yeah.
Because you guys, your parents, not your, your grandparents were fleeing genocide.
Right.
Was that something that you could talk to your grandparents about, or was that more private?
No, I think it's important to ask the question, especially, you know, your father is Ashkenazi, and I think it's important to get those stories from his family, Holocaust survivors, and, you know, being from Poland and Russia, it's important to ask those questions.
Yeah, and also for people who are listening who are Mizrahim, like, no, not your grandfather was from Yemen. The last Yemenite Jews had to go to the UAE. Like, that culture is gone. And you survived that culture, and mom survives that culture, and Maya and I survived that culture. And we have an obligation to continue it, because if we don't, who will?
Yeah, I was fortunate to meet my grandfather, who was a Yemenite. And I'm proud to say that I'm part of it. you know, being Yemenite. Yemenite, Sephardic, Spanish. So it's a good family tree, I think.
It's a nice melting pot.
It's a melting pot, yes. It's nice to be.
We're a nice big mix of all kinds of Jew.
That's what makes it
interesting.
Yeah.
We are finishing up, but not quite finished yet. I have a really good question over here. So, Nona, you growing up, you lived through and lived with one of the most significant things that has happened to our people in our 5,000 years of being a people, which was finally restoring homeland for us, the creation of the Israeli state, going back to our indigenous homeland and having that immense piece of pride and piece of culture restored to us. And I think that now it's been two or three generations for most people. And that connection and that pride is definitely starting to fade with my generation, which is really sad to watch. So what would you want to tell my generation of people to restore that pride and where we're from?
Pride for Israel, you know.
To be proud. I grew up with all different kinds of different type of people in Israel, because it's a melting pot. Just like in the United States, New York, people are from all over. Just to listen to one another, to not to hate each other, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like growing up in Israel, Ashkenazi and Sephardim, they're Jewish, and they still had a problem with them, you know, assimilate, you know, living together, being happy together. Just be nice to each other and support each other and be happy. Just enjoy life and not have hate in you or hate other people. And just
Maybe get a little education too. Maybe some Jews, younger Jews, should get an education about maybe take a visit to Israel before you make assumptions. And maybe spend some time among the people and, you know, get a little cultural awakening.
Yeah.
Before making assumptions about what you think Israel is, you know, and the people are.
People change their minds as soon as they come to Israel, and they said, we heard things that are not true. Because some Jewish people are against Israel. Learn before you say something. Don't just get information for people who just brainwash you.
A lot of propaganda.
Educate yourself before you open the mouth.
Yeah.
Really?
Take a visit.
Listen to Isaac and I will educate you.
Have a little hummus.
Falafel. Have a falafel.
Put some za'atar on your hummus. And then Mama, my question for you is, you grew up in America, but your family is alive because of Israel. My family's alive because of Israel. Nona's parents were refugees from Yemen and from Spain. Saba's parents, who knows where they were from? It's very complicated, but we know that they were from Iraq and someplace else. They were refugees who survived ethnic cleansing because they escaped to Israel. For you, what does that mean for your identity, and what would you want to tell my generation? Give us some perspective.
You know, everybody has a story. You can learn from people from different places. Everybody has a history. And rather than have a notion of what you think they are about and their people are about, maybe learn a little something from them. Everybody can teach you something. Become a little bit open-minded.
Educated.
And yeah, educated.
Educate yourself.
To people's different backgrounds and experiences. And although we're different, we're so similar in so many ways. We, you know, refugees are refugees, whether you're from Israel or from United States or any other country, you know. A little open-mindedness.
Amazing. So we are closing in, unfortunately, on time. I know that you guys probably want to hear me for hours, but unfortunately I have homework to do, so it's not going to happen. So thank you guys for sitting with me and talking with me. This was actually just an extended excuse for me to get on a Zoom call with you guys, because I miss you.
We love you very much,
miss you so much,
Julia.
Every Shabbat I call my mom and my Nana, because I'm I've become, as I said, aggressively Jewish for the first time in my life, really. And my mom got me a set of Shabbat candles. And it's funny because the candles say Shabbos on them. And I feel very Ashki when I light them. They say Shabbos on the box. And so...
You are part Ashki as well.
Yeah, I'm embracing my cultural roots, Mom.
Good for you.
Yeah, and so then when I light my Shabbat candles, I FaceTime you guys, and you guys are always together every weekend when I'm lighting the candles. And I'm like, what are you guys eating? And I'm like, oh, no, and I just made some kibbeh, like, no big deal. And I'm just like, I miss it. So we'll pretty soon,
come home, honey.
Next year in Jerusalem.
Yes,
God willing. Mostly, I want to say to all these young kids, be happy. Just enjoy life. You know, really, life is short. Just enjoy it and be happy. And
dump the hate.
Dump the hate. Hate is not good. It's not good for you. It's not good for your head and for your body. It's not good.
We don't have time for the haters, Nona.
Right, exactly. We don't want any haters. We love everybody. Even our opposite, people who hate us, we love them. You know why? Because we feel sorry for them. Yeah. No, because, you know, just wasting their time hating people instead of loving and being happy and smile and just enjoy life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any final words for the podcast?
Take a visit to Israel. Go check it out. See what it's all about.
Love you.
Love you.
And to all of you guys listening to this podcast, I love you too. Thank you for coming on this adventure with us. And we will see you next week. So we are doing a bi-weekly podcast, meaning once every 2 weeks, because Isaac and I do have day jobs. So we're going to do once every 2 weeks, which will basically give you guys better content, more fresh ideas, and a lot more time of hearing our beautiful voices. So I will see you guys in 2 weeks back with Isaac for Jewish Identity Crisis. Thank you for listening today. I love you all dearly, and good night. Bye.